Good afternoon, everybody. This is Zeke along with Finn, and we're about to do Movement Museum for you.
Mm-hmm.
How are you doing, Finn?
I'm good. The sun is shining. I biked across town after days off the saddle, and I feel wonderful.
That's very good to hear. Where mm-hmm. have you? Last week we missed you.
Yeah, I was running off to a conference at Yale in New Haven on music and math and computation. It's surprisingly, we had about 60 people at the conference, so it's not so esoteric. But to my surprise, I get there, and one of the evening panels is all about a dance performance that was about embodying Fourier transforms through musical gesture.
Hold on. Fourier transform? Can you first spell that, please?
Fourier? F-O-U-R-R-I-E-R. I think it's double R.
Okay, because I'm thinking foray as in the composer.
Single R, actually. F-O-U-R-I-E-R. Yeah,
okay.
Fourier. He's a mathematician that came up with a very interesting way to describe waves by breaking them down to components. So things that we find normally really hard to quantize, he was like, actually, you can do it like this. It's a beautiful, beautiful mathematical analytic technique. Anyway, but not something usually associated with dance. So I was really excited to see what people had done with that. There's a performance somewhere in Europe, and we're going to talk about that more maybe later on this month, because I'm going to follow up on that excitement to see if we can bring all of my interests, i.e. music and dance and math, together in one awesome coordinated presentation.
That would be very cool.
It'd be very exciting.
In the meantime, this week, now, the
mm-hmm.
present.
Yeah.
We're doing a sort of follow-up on the Fringe Festival, where after the Fringe, or just about as the Fringe was ending, there were one dancer who was here last week, Tamara Ober, who is from Minneapolis, and she's part of the Zenon Dance Company, which is a repertory company. And yeah, she had done her first ever solo show. And then there was this guy, John O'Katz, who is from, of all places, Australia. And he his day job is to do fringe festivals.
His day job is to do fringe festivals.
Yes. as he says someplace in this interview that's playing, it's, yeah, I make a living at it.
What's his night job?
He doesn't. No, there is no night job. It is his
everything he does.
Yes,
wow.
Which on one side you think, wow, that's pretty damn cool. On the other side you say, whoa.
That's got to be hard.
Yes and no. You'll hear it's for this one, he ended up just on a whim going to India because he had heard that there's some place in India where you dance every day.
Beautiful.
And he just said, I want to dance every day. So he went there.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, I got them both into a studio, although then microphones crapped out. So the audio quality is not as pristine as I would have liked, but it is understandable. And so I got them talking to each other and all about dancing at the Fringe, comedy dancing, which was one of the things that I always struck me about the Fringe in that, yeah, well, I know the Ballet Trocadero and other just over-the-top sort of slapstick type of dance. It is, from my perspective, that sort of, yeah, most of the time dance is, for lack of a better word, really serious. And at the Fringe...
No, I'd say a lot of dance that's on stage is, generally speaking, very serious.
That's pretty much what I deal with, yes.
Okay,
as I said, from my perspective.
Uh-huh, all right, well, from mine... The laughs we have anyway.
Yeah, oh, I agree. And it just was then seeing comedic dance up on stage that, while was dance oriented, had an awful lot of mime, a lot of slapstick, and a lot of other stuff tossed in that just started making my head go round in circles and so on and so forth, which was very, very interesting. Anyhow, that is... whatchamacallit, to say, we have the interview in two parts, and I'm now just going to go to the first part, which is right here, and let Tamara and Jono speak for themselves.
It's about the conversation.
Yes.
So let's get engaged in something brilliant.
Let's be interesting.
Let's do that.
For years and years and years, I was searching for my passion in life, and I tried many, many different things, and... it's like, where do you begin? I basically went to theatre school, and as soon as I started going to theatre school, I just knew that I was going to be doing that for the rest of my life. And I thought I'd found the be-all and end-all and what I was good at. For a long time, I'd been kind of okay and good at lots of things, but never really good at anything. And I went to theatre school, and I used to be very shy and introverted. And so going to theatre school also made me kind of extroverted and brought me out of, brought me into my body and out of my shell. And at the time I was doing yoga and capoeira, and I found this physical theatre school, which was kind of Lecoq-based, a lot of mask work, and the creativity comes from being, getting into your body and being physical. And I just loved it, so I just started doing it. And that was about nearly 10 years ago, and ever since then I've just been making stuff. So this is my fifth solo show, and I've directed stuff, and I've made other stuff, and videos, and been getting into making videos and stuff like that lately. And yeah, and this specifically is this piece that I'm doing right now. I love dance, and I love moving, and I also have been very interested in TV series lately, in the last couple of years. I love TV series. I love how they can hook you in by plot into like 13 hours of having to watch. That's okay. I love how they hook you into 13 hours of having to watch every single next episode. Because I, ultimately, what I want to do with audiences is have them enter a different reality when they come into the theatre. I want to transport them to another reality so that alter their consciousness, so that when they're inside there, they enter another world. And so TV series do that for me, and I think a lot of it has to do with plot. So I became very interested in plot and how story can do that. And I think that watching someone like being extremely physical and throwing all their imagination into their physicality is also incredibly riveting. And throwing themselves into their imagination is also incredibly riveting. So basically I tried to combine all of those things. Normally I do comedy, and it's just going from laugh to laugh to laugh to laugh to laugh. But with this one, it's a bit different. It's got more of a dramatic structure, and I just wanted to like hook people in and keep them there. What is dance? And what's the difference between dance and movement? And what's the difference between an actor standing on stage completely still and just moving their mouth and dance? I mean, I'm not a trained dancer. I mean, I'm not a classical or contemporary like trained dancer. I've done a lot of yoga, a lot of Feldenkrais, a lot of contact improvisation, a lot of capoeira, and so I'm definitely like having physical awareness, and I move and I dance a lot, but I haven't got a trained dancer's body. And so I mean, it would be silly for me to try to do a contemporary dance piece and try to be a contemporary dancer. Like, it'd probably be comedy more than it would be. Well, you know what it comes down to? I think it just comes down to imagination. I mean, what's riveting to watch is when someone throws themselves into their imagination, and that's for an actor or a dancer. And it doesn't really matter if someone is fully committing their imagination and their emotions and their being into doing whatever they're doing. That's riveting to watch, and so that's why I figured I could just, like, that's what the challenge for me would be. It wouldn't be about whether I can do, you know, a beautiful turn or anything like that. It was just about whether I could throw my imagination into whatever I was doing. Because there's a lot of guys who I've met who have grown up in the same kind of situation, where they're guys who, because we never did dance when we were younger or anything like that. It was sissy, it wasn't encouraged at all. And then in their kind of 20s, they kind of found yoga, and they found contact improvisation. Well, they found dance, and they found they really loved doing dance and enjoying it. And so in their 20s, they kind of started just doing lots of stuff. And so they don't have like dancer-trained bodies, but they do have a lot of years of putting energy into movement and dance. And in a lot of ways, it makes their bodies a lot more interesting. Because when you get a trained dancer's body who's been dancing since they've been 5 years old, and I mean, often the people will start with ballet when they're quite young, and it gives them a very, very straight lines and very held and rigid, and then it just grows from there, and it's imprinted into their body, so that's how they grow up, and that kind of, that form is actually something that a lot of dancers try to escape. And like a lot of dancers end up trying to, they hate that they have that kind of, that beautiful kind of body, and they try to find different ways of moving and to be, you know, to have a different look or whatever. And yeah, so I've noticed there's lots and lots of guys in their late 20s and early 30s and now even into their mid-late 30s, and like me, who just have spent a lot of time doing stuff with their body. And so there's something kind of really interesting about our bodies, but it's not, but we're not, obviously, very obviously not, you know, trained in the kind of contemporary or, you know, dance or whatever. What do you? You've been nodding a lot, smiling, Tamara. What do you think about?
I like listening to you talk about all of that.
Yeah.
I definitely.
How do you see my body when I'm dancing?
I think you're an amazing mover. And that's always been more interesting to me than the perfect lines and shapes.
And why is that more interesting?
To me, I get a whole sense of humanity and character and sort of like personality, and that's what draws me in more so than... I think I've always been drawn to more character, personality, story, anything I could sort of tune into on a different level. Lines and shapes were beautiful, but they only took me so far in. I think that's me as a person, though. You know, I really enjoy the depth of getting to know someone's character, rather than just looking at, yeah, the shapes and lines and whatever. So it's powerful, and it's odd to me that it was ever separated. Like, I've seen a lot of shows where people are talking and they don't use their body, or they use it very minimally. And maybe it's just the way that I am, but I like to see the physicality that comes from what we say. I can't believe we don't use our bodies more, just in general, like when we're talking to people on the street, or it's natural for me to use my body. I mean, to have conversations with body. But we've like taken, I don't know why was, you know, why is talking always just with your mouth and your head, you know?
Well, it's probably not. I mean, I think there's lots of studies that show like 90%, I don't know, I'm not sure what the percentages are, they're probably just made up statistics, but 90% of communication is nonverbal and stuff like that.
Well, that's true, so, and I'm talking about our culture,
yeah,
as
I
well.
I mean, yeah, if you look at Italians or something like that,
yeah,
they're all over the place with their hands. And
not just that, but, you know, Aboriginal tribes and, you know, mm-hmm. I suppose all sorts of, but it's...
Yeah, Aborigines in Australia, they had, they had the same name for a river, but if they did a certain hand gesture, it'd be one river. If they did another hand gesture, it'd be a different river.
Yeah.
So what for you is, like, I mean, I know it's a, or maybe it's a kind of wanky question, but, like, what's the difference between movement and dance? I suppose what jumped into my head was, it was just more kind of like intention, you know what I mean? Like, maybe it's like dance is when the energy is pushed out. It's movement that has an intention behind it or something like that. Whereas movement is just, is like a subsidiary of what you're doing. Improvisation.
Mm-hmm.
I have very specific imaginal kind of, I have an imaginal choreography, right? And so I definitely have specific kind of movement things that I do, and I guess how I do them is, well, I mean I guess to an extent everything is improvised to an extent. Like when anyone does anything, there's a amount of it which is improvised, and how much you do it or go through with it, and timing and things like that. But I wouldn't say it's highly choreographed at all. I have a game, and I just play the game, But how, yeah, it's salsa, but the moves that I do are in different orders, and the energy that I do it with, and when I become one person or when I become the other person, that changes every night as well. I end it the same, it's improvised. The game for me for that one is that I'm on the floor because he's growing up, and so I spend that first part of that just on the floor level, and I just play around with being on the floor, and I have fun. So that's the only two things that I do for that first part of that. But then it evolves. Like there's a flashback to the past, and then it goes into a bit of a different. I go through a different thing, and there's a number of scenes that happen, and each time, like one might happen where I start following my head around, and that's because like the character is a real dreamer, and he gets led around by his head, his imagination gets captured by what all these different things that are going around, and then the one after that he might be doing that, but he gets off balance all the time because of that, and so he starts falling down. As his head's going one way, his body's falling down, and so they're the kind of games that I have. But where I go on stage and what I'm doing is improvised.
I can't separate like dance and movement in my head, but I can definitely talk about like the game that we play and how invested and true you are to your game. Like if you have a game, if you're conscious of a game, where your focus and attention is, I feel like that's something that some of the greatest dancers that I've seen perform, I talk to them about what they're doing, what they're thinking about, and I dance with some of them, and we talk about the different games that we play. And it's really interesting because some people will go through an entire show thinking about their pinky finger, and it changes their movement, and it's a fun game for them to play, and it changes the way that they move, and it brings life to it, just them being true to their pinky finger. And usually I'm like playing a whole other game, like what kind of character am I tonight, what am I feeling right now, more story games, you know, rather than physical games. But if I'm really, really true to my game, even though it's radically different than somebody else's game, I also get like this incredible life brought to my performance.
What are the actual games that you have in your performance?
See, and this performance that I'm doing here at the Fringe is like so different than what I do in my day job, like as a contemporary dancer. I have to stretch my imagination quite a bit in contemporary dance, because a lot of times choreographers leave you with really abstract movement, and you find the ways to weave things together. Even if it's kinetically rather than mentally, you find ways to make a story and make a game that in that context. But in this show, it's interesting because it's theatrical and there is a story, and I don't want to usually I have a bad judgment on mime, you know, miming things, but it's fascinating because I watch you do some mime stuff, and it's incredible. It's incredible to watch. And I think that it's that idea of bringing things to life. It doesn't matter what you're doing. I mean, it does matter what you're doing, but it's how do you bring whatever it is you're doing to life? And it doesn't matter if it's dance or movement or whatever, but if there's an honesty or some kind of depth or focus or concentration and sometimes those words are quite constipated, you know? It's deeper than that.
So do you have specific, in this show, do you have I'm just interested in, like, do you have games? What do you think about when you're performing?
I try to think about exactly where I'm at and just a little bit ahead. Mm-hmm. And only live in those two little time frames. The exact moment, what is my body feeling, sensing, you know, whatever. And then just like, just the next line or movement. And no further, and nothing backwards. And I think the foundation of the show, I'm trying to go through an honest adventure, mm-hmm, of the character. And I totally fail sometimes. And then, like, I lose my sense of the character, and I come out of the piece and I'm thinking back on something that happened that wasn't supposed to happen. I bumped something or whatever. And I lose myself, and that's just like a, I can feel it every time. I can feel when I fail, in a sense. What was your question?
Well, I was asking what you were thinking. What do you think about?
I think I character.
But it's an interesting point you brought up, that you if you feel like you, sometimes you feel like you fail, or we feel like we're doing something, I didn't do that as good as I could have done it, or something like that. And what you do in those moments, because they are kind of very real moments, you know what I mean? And
vulnerable, yeah.
Yeah. And in a lot of ways, there are no mistakes, you know what I mean? It's just, that's what.
It's funny because my mistakes, like, I can see them clearly in the movement that I've chosen, because some of it is improvised, and I really am just trying to stay true to a game rather than knowing exactly where my hands are supposed to go, exactly whatever. There's a moment when I'm supposed to be trying to catch a butterfly, right?
Yeah.
And I'm supposed to be seeing it and then grabbing for it.
Yeah.
That's my goal, because that's real life, is, yeah, like you see it and you reach, yeah, for what you grab. But instead, my eyes are shooting all over, my hands are shooting all over, and they're not connected at all. But in real life, you see something, you go to grab for it,
yeah,
and it's a very clear connection. Yeah. So that's, I know I've failed when I get so...
That's a hard one. That's, I mean, when you, like, I also try to actually visualize things that aren't there when I'm on stage. That's, for me, that's throwing my imagination into it. And it is a difficult thing, especially with depth. Because depth is, like, if somebody's close to you or someone is far away, you're going to be very different in how you look, you know what I mean?
It's,
and
true.
If you've got a massive lake out in front of you, that it's very kind of, it's a very different look and that you have to show. And you never really see it, you know what I mean? Like, you play, for me, I play that I'm seeing it. But I know that I'm not really, I know that I'm not really seeing a lake, but I also know that it's more than just, I'm just imagining. Like, I'm really trying to imagine, you know?
It's amazing. There's a true honesty, and maybe this is the deeper level that you can go, is that you can exist in two places at one time. And it's not bouncing from one to the other, which is, you know, but it seems like there's a subjective and an objective, and if you can do them both at the same time, rather than bounce from one to the other.
Mm. Well, yeah, I mean, you're aware of very many things at the same time.
Yeah.
Like, I'm aware of this imaginal world that's all around me that I'm in, but I'm also aware of there's people in a theatre sitting there staring at me, and I'm aware that my hip is hurting a bit. And
yeah,
I'm aware that, you know, like, I'm going a bit slow tonight. I've got to better pick it up.
Yeah.
Like, you can be aware of many different things. You know, I think what I've learned from doing, like, quite a lot is that I really just let, any time that I think it's not going well or I think I have those kind of doubts come into my mind about anything like that. I just kind of let it go now, and I'm just like, there is no option but to trust that everyone's right there with you and riveted, and that's the only success that you're gonna. I mean, the only way, if it is going badly, the only way to bring people back is to throw yourself more into your imagination and to enjoy it for yourself. So
yeah.
So you kind of don't, for me, I don't have any choice. Like, I'm just like, if I feel that something is not going, it's not what I want it to be or something like that, the only choice I have is to keep throwing myself more into my imagination and just let any kind of like, it's not going that well or whatever.
That's in different words, that's totally what I think of doing. It feels like I give myself a big smack across the face and I go, wake up, and I get really present with exactly what I'm touching and sensing and feeling right then. It's like, I can feel myself wandering, and then when something bumps funny or it feels like I'm failing, it's like I really get that cold splash of water and I come back to what is happening right now. Mm. Right now. Don't think ahead, don't think behind, just like recommit. And it's an amazing pattern, I think, that you can create. You know, like, I think that's what you do, is you throw water on yourself and sort of recommit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's all I can say as well.
Yep.
Now, that was the first part, or actually, to be brutally honest, the second part of this conversation between John O'Katz and Tamara Ober, who were here last week as part of the Fringe Festival, and I was lucky enough and
opportunistic, fortuitous, serendipitous.
let's stick with the easy one. Lucky enough to actually get them into some place where then I could let them go off and talk all about dance, which just to me is way, way more entertaining and interesting than anything I can say about dance.
Mm. Well, I'm sure you could say some interesting things that they wouldn't come up with. So,
and then, yeah, I get myself in trouble.
I'm just being contrary. Anyway, you're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM with the Movement Museum team of two today, Zeke and Finn. Mm-hmm. And it's around
2:33 and 9 seconds.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. It's hot and steamy outside, too.
It is totally hot and steamy outside. People, go out there and get your vitamin D after our show.
Or you can listen to it over the internet if you'd like to get your vitamin D. It's movement-museum.blogspot.com, or you can stick in Movement Museum into Facebook and come up with a Facebook page. Mm-hmm. I think we're up to a whopping 52 fans.
Ooh.
Which is very, very cool, because
keep it coming.
Yeah, I don't think anybody has gone and spammed all their friends and said, fan us.
Yeah, so that's good.
And as long as we keep getting one or two more, then maybe nobody has to spam their friends. But yes, and if you'd like to get in touch with us as well on a more personal level, there's email, which is movement@ckut.ca.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah,
spelled the Anglophone way.
Well, that's because we're talking English.
Well, we also talk French sometimes.
Sometimes.
All right.
But yeah, if I notice you have a calendar thing up there.
Yeah. So I was poking around the RQD site. That's the Regroupement Québécois de la Danse. And they've got a number of shows listed coming up in the next while. So including something that's happened at Parc La Fontaine.
Yeah, those are always wonderful shows. Have you been to Théâtre de la Verdure yet?
No, I haven't.
I'm going to have to take you one of these days, because it can combine two wonderful things.
Yeah.
Is that, first of all, it's free dance by some really, really kick-ass dancers. That's where I think I first fell in love with Margie Gillis.
Oh, really?
And then also, because it's free and in the park, you can sneak in a six-pack.
Oh,
and at which point, there's nothing better than hanging out on the lawn in the back, because you got to be discreet about it, with a nice six-pack, watching some absolutely amazing people dance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, for the second year, Théâtre de la Verdure has invited choreographer Marie Belland to do a project on dance that will happen as part of this, the Théâtre de la Verdure. So Théâtre de la Verdure is going to be running from the 11th of July, so starting in 2 weeks, all the way to the end of the month.
C'est une évidence.
And
c'est en deux mots,
no, end of August, isn't it?
Et la famille.
And we have a commercial Montréal, running in the background.
Je suis et j'y reste.
We do?
I think so.
Pour nous vivre à Montréal, c'est donner
une qualité. Hold on a second, then we got noise on the, on the city's website that I hear. Okay, there it goes. Thank you.
All right.
Good thing you had those headphones on.
Good thing someone had headphones on. Yeah, so there's going to be some great dancing action, usually happening between 6 and 8 o'clock. So it would be really good to go check that out. You can even look it up through the Parc La Fontaine information or go to quebecdance.org to find more info on that particular performance.
I was going to the city's website to go look it up, but then realized, nope, I can't do that anymore. So what do you have next?
All right. Well, there's some other fun things that are up on the schedule. For more July exciting stuff, there's going to be apparently a parade of art. I'm trying to understand what this is about quickly because I didn't read it ahead of time. My apologies. So in the Quartier des Spectacles, again at the end of July, so around the 26th, there's going to be a big pile of different arts presenting themselves in different beautiful ways. We've got sculpture, architecture, music, dance, theater, cinema, all part of Le Grand Charivari, Le Grand Charivari. Well, that makes sense. And this is coordinated with the City of Montreal and books, and it should be a fun pileup of exciting art forms all at once, happening in all different places. So there should be 700 different artists performing or presenting from 7 different artistic disciplines in 7 different arrondissements or cultural centers in Montreal. So wow, that should be fun to check out and figure out where all the dance is happening. Unfortunately, no more information is currently available, but it would be great to find out more about that, and maybe we'll follow up sometime later.
And then the one thing I wanted to ask you is, do you drive, right?
No.
Oh, you don't drive.
I bicycle.
You bicycle.
I pull trailers. I strap things to my body and to the beast that I call Edwin with 2 wheels.
That's unfortunate. Because there, I then decided if the city's website is going to play music in the background, and since I don't have the headphones, I can't tell that, but thankfully you have the headphones. I went to the RQD website and realized that they were talking about the Festival des Arts de Saint-Sauveur, which definitely looks interesting, but then the one thing that I'm having difficulty with is how the do we get there? And you don't want to stick me in a trailer.
No, I don't think sticking me in a trailer.
However,
maybe I could bungee you to my back rack, though, as long as you don't wiggle too much.
I would definitely wiggle. Won't get there, but there, never mind. I've really always wanted to get, a tandem.
Yeah,
Be cool, because then it might not even be that long to get there.
Mm-hmm.
But how about we get back to part two of the talk between Tamara and Jono, because there, as far as I can tell, I know that I spent way too much time, A, listening to it where it was riveting, B, editing where I still was interested, and now actually even hearing it back the probably fourth or fifth time now, it still is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited to hear what your process was. That's one of the most fascinating questions for me is process and how you go about making something and how other people, like, because there's a million ways to do anything. And for me, with different shows, I've had very different processes. For this show, I had the name, The Accident. That just came to me when I was in the bath one day. And I thought, it's a great name. It's intriguing, and it can mean all sorts of things. And also, with The Fringe, you have to give it a name and a blurb and a photo before you know what the show is. So I thought The Accident was a great name, so that's what I was going with. And then I was in India. I went to India on a whim. I just wanted to dance every day, and I heard about a place. It was an intentional community in the south of India, which was it's a universal city called Auroville. And a friend was staying there, and she said, come, you can dance every day. And so I said, okay, I'm coming. And literally, I had a whole other show lined up. I was going to do a show called Casio Girl, and it was going to be me playing a girl who makes, like, songs on her Casio in her bedroom. And, like, I was going to have, like, electric blue glitter and all sorts of things. And then I went up, and I had a director lined up and everything, and I went to a party or something, and I met this girl, and we just started this conversation. It was just one of those conversations where it's kind of like, follow your heart. And my heart said I wanted to dance every day. And so I said, right, I'm going to India. And so I went to India, and I found myself in this place called Auroville, and I started dancing every day, and I looked for a director, found a director, and I was very lucky there. There was actually two people who were both Lecoq trained, and I was just like, what's going on? It's amazing. And I chose one of my directors, and that was Jeremy, and we basically just entered the space and started improvising, and we knew nothing about what we were going to do. And we would have gone through like a good 30 plots. Like, we just like, and improvisations, we did so much stuff, and it was going to be all sorts of different things, and we just thrashed, and we kind of came up. I also have like showings at the end of each week when I'm devising, just as a impetus to make sure that you've actually got something to show. So we were working and throwing stuff up, and we kind of found a world, an imaginal world of these characters that lived in this world, and then we started working more on the plot, and it was just lots of thinking and trying to nut out the nuts and bolts of the plot. And then I really worked on the climax, and I wanted, because I've never done this before, but I decided to work backwards. I found what the climax of the plot was, and then I tried to make everything build up to that climax. Everything in the plot build up to that climax. And once we had that structure, it was like trying to shit a watermelon. It was very hard to come up with that. But once we found that structure, and I was like, yeah, that's gonna work as a structure, then it was much easier. It was just about making the scenes. And then we had literally like probably a week or something to throw that story into scenes, and I put it on at a theatre in India. And then Jeremy left, and that was quite successful, that run. And and then Jeremy left, and there was another girl there, Irene, and she was an Italian dancer. And so she came in, and she was going to help me with the dance and stuff. In the end, she turned out to be amazing, because also she was a non-English speaking background. We rejigged the structure, how I told the story, just to make it incredibly clear, because so that it would be very understandable. Because I wanted a story that it wouldn't be difficult for audiences to follow. I wanted them to be sucked into the story and just taken along the journey, so that they wouldn't have to be working out, oh, what is that going to set something like? It wasn't clever or tricky or anything like that, and I just wanted to. I don't want it to be an emotional experience that was very easy to come into. So then it was about working out the emotional story and when to hit what emotions and what the emotional journey would be, and having a very, very clear story. And we actually didn't end up working on the dances too much. We just worked on them a bit. And we came up just with these kind of structured, these games that we did. And then we did not. I worked with her for like 3 or 4 weeks, and then we put on the show again at a theatre in India, and it went quite well. And then I had a bit of time off. I did another show of mine in Prague, and I was hanging out in Europe for a week or so. And then I came here to Montreal, and I looked at the videos of both of the shows, and I kind of did a little bit of editing. About there was some stuff that we dropped that I liked, and I would put back in, and I'm gonna. And as it's being put up in front of audiences, it's changed a bit. There's, you know, like things where I can get more comedy, I've kind of played out a little bit more. I've done my own editing just on stage. And the dance games are becoming stronger. It's running like 5 or 6 minutes overtime at the moment, so I'm going to have to cut more I'm probably going to work on it more. And that's it. That's how the show is made. And it's a really different show for me because normally I'm improvising a lot. And even if I have a structure, I'm improvising a lot and it's all about the laughter. But this show is, it's like a drama really. And so it's just about doing each scene as best I can. And it's actually really, and I'm really enjoying that. I'm really enjoying having to, that challenge. And also not relying on the laughter to know that I'm succeeding. And that's a bit of a challenge at times. And there's a lot of dance in it. So I'm like, for me, so I'm like, physically it's like I'm having to do yoga every day. You know, last year I did a show and I had a mustache and I think it made me look fatter. Everyone now says like, oh, you look so skinny. I'm really done with costume, hey. My second show was awesome. I could just turn up and sometimes I washed it, sometimes I didn't. It didn't really matter.
I know.
But this show, I've got a white shirt and I have to wash it after. I've got three white shirts, but I have to wash them after each show and I have to iron.
You just need
to. I just don't see the point of ironing. Why is it if something is smooth that it's so much more respectable and kind of like nice?
I know.
But it is, you know, if I turned up with a crinkly shirt, it'd be a bit kind of like, he didn't really put the effort in, did he? You know? So I have to iron my shirts, but I hate ironing. Like, in my life, I choose clothes based on not having to iron things.
Mm-hmm. God bless, amen.
You know what I do when I go to like clothes shops? Yeah. I just go through feeling. Like I just go through feeling all the fabric.
Okay, for
if it's nice feeling, if it's soft and nice, I'll buy it.
Okay, I'm totally sold, and I also go to use places because it's already been shrunk and faded and like
and
you know, everything that could go wrong has already gone wrong. I do the exact same thing. I go through and I feel all of them and I say and I buy used clothes because it's cheaper and I say if it doesn't make it through the dryer, I don't want it. Like, it doesn't belong in my wardrobe.
Yeah.
So if it shrinks or if it falls apart, it's got to go through the washer and the dryer and survive. And if it doesn't, it wasn't meant to be with me.
So hence we have a lot of clothes that hang off of us.
They're
kind of droopy.
It's true. They feel so good. They give me room to move.
Yeah, exactly. You want room.
In Edmonton, Canada, I was doing a show with some other people and I saw some amazing solo shows and I said, I want to do that. That's I need to do a show. Gypsy and the General was the name of it. And it was a collaborative physical theater piece from people that studied Lecoq at LISPA in London. And I'm good friends with them. That was where the dream was born, was like sitting on a bench in a co-op. And I went home from Edmonton and I went to work. And that meant, what? I don't know. I've never made a piece on my own in my life. I've been in dance company for 7 years where they tell me exactly what to do. I didn't know how to create a piece, especially the kind that I wanted to create, which was more physical theater than dance. I had no interest in creating a dance piece, like a strictly dance piece. So, so I rented a space, like I've been looking for space for quite a while. I rented a space. It's amazing. This guy ended up sort of like giving it to me for a little cheaper. I went in, I did improvisation based on ideas around maps and I don't even know what else.
Maps.
That was my idea, was a map.
Right.
I liked maps from the English
Patient.
Did
you have anyone watch you when you were improvising?
No, I videotaped, and then I would go home and watch the video.
Right.
I did everything alone. My goal was to do everything alone, which is, now I know, impossible. Impossible and crazy. Because you go crazy.
Yeah.
And so I made movement. I didn't know what I was making. A couple weeks into it, I woke up at 3 a.m., and I had half of this amazing story about this girl named Pippa who was blind and the next morning I woke up at 3 a.m. and I had the other half of the story, and it would make a great novel. But I was like, no, I'm not writing a novel, I'm doing a fringe show. So I just continued on with the improvisation, dance improvisation, and this story that had come in. And it was all mixed together. It was totally a disastrous mess, but I just kept sort of pulling the parts together. I searched for music constantly. I made videos. I made dance videos. I made other videos. Everything and anything that had a theme. So I just kept pulling tons and tons of material together. I did lots of writing. Every morning I got up and did like hours of writing before I went to the dance company to work. And I have so much material that a lot of it disappeared on my hard drive right before I came here. But I did
because
a work...
Because the hard drive crashed.
Yeah. And I did a work in progress program. I got into a work in... because they liked my story. So I did that, did two showings, which is not enough to get really good feedback. And finally, I had created an entire sound score, a character, a story, an arc, everything, and it was too complicated. I couldn't even perform it. I couldn't even come close because I hadn't memorized lines. I hadn't, everything was just sort of crumbling. And, then everything disappeared altogether. So my hard drive crashed. I lost.
Say that with a smile on your face.
I do, because it was the most. It's the most beautiful thing that ever happened, because the whole story, as I decided to rebuild from this crash, I invited somebody to work with me, and it was the best mistake ever. I mean, it was like somebody that was a director and wanted to direct and said, I don't want to do a voice over for you, I want to help you rebuild. And we had 2 weeks before Montreal, and it's a miracle that I made it. I was ready to withdraw. I was convinced it wasn't going to work. It's a miracle that it all came together, and it came together in such a beautiful way, which is a miracle as well. So I was very lucky everything fell apart.
It's interesting for me, like, that the story just came to you when you were like in bed, or you just sort of dreamt it. And I think that, like, for me, that's like you enter the process, and it's kind of like the show hunts you in a lot of ways. Like, you don't know, like, you think you make up the show, but in actual fact the show's there, and it's just about you kind of like allowing yourself to discover the show or something. Like, you start working on it in the only way you know how, which is going into a space and improvising and dancing and doing whatever you need to do. But then it actually hits you in the form of a story when you're in bed.
Yeah, that's true.
And then you get that kind of raw material, and you start and you spew out as much as you can, and you get more and more things to work with. It's almost like you're throwing a whole lot of clay onto her, and then you can start editing and start sculpting away and you know.
Some of it was torture, just torture, being by myself.
It really is. It's like giving birth, eh?
Locking myself in a room and saying, make a dance. I mean, I would allow myself to like sit and like yell and cry and kick like a little kid, totally before I started rehearsal, because I just like I needed to like just listen to myself scream,
really,
like just to like be my own sounding board and go like, I hate this, like I don't want to do this right now. And if I just like listen to myself say it and feel it, then it would all kind of pass out, and I would go, okay, now let's get this thing done. And as soon as I get like 5 minutes into it, it's all I can focus on.
And
it's like it's obsessive. It's like I can't see, think, or feel anything else.
I definitely spent 2 months where I was just the whole time just focused on what the show was going to be and how I could make it better.
I guess mine was like didn't come in those wonderful chunks. Mine came in like every single rehearsal. I would spend the first 5 minutes just like in this like awful state of resistance, and then complete 1,000% commitment, like beyond. And then coming out of it, I could barely come out of it. Sometimes it would expire, and I would be like, okay, I'm done, like, for the day. But other times it would be like, people would try to interrupt me, and I'd be like, you know what, I'm not even listening to you right now. I'm sorry, I really need to, I'll listen to you later. I can't focus on anything, but I was just in the middle of making this thing, and I'm there. This Fringe experience and solo artists and this is an introduction to an entirely different life than the dance company. It's opening new doors and entirely different ways to look at the world and ways to live in the world, and it's a bit frightening.
Why is it frightening?
Because I think the dance company was my my anchor or my floating device, but whatever, it saved me. It's the one thing that was safe and stable and sane. I knew where I was going to be from September through May, every day from 11 to 5.
Yeah.
And I knew where the money was coming from.
Yep.
And I knew it also was creative and was my passion and was teaching me something. And I mean, it's pretty unbelievable.
You sound like you're done with it.
It's, no, I'm in transition, which means it dies and either it's reborn in a new way, just in my heart and in my body and in my mind, or it is done, but I will never say it's done until I'm doing something else and I do hindsight and I'll go, oh yeah, it was done then. But I would never say that until I'm like well into something else.
Right.
I won't quit until I know I'm going to be safe somewhere else.
Really?
It's true.
I think at some point though, you do have to walk out on the plank in a lot of ways. Like I've kind of found myself doing the Fringe circuit, and I can earn a living doing that, but I'm really keen to do more film and video.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of thinking I'm not going to do a show next year, I'm not going to tour next year, do another show and tour, because I really want to do film and video, and I know that that's a walking out on a plank, but you kind of gotta, you know, like...
I know, I feel like it's all about calculated risk. You have to be smart enough to deal with...
But there's always some point where you just have to risk. But there's always some point where you have to follow your intuition and you have to... I mean, you don't have to. No one has to do anything. But you are faced with those... Especially as an artist, eh? Because there's so little security.
And I've watched quite a few people and a few of my good friends actually close the door and on dance or their career, the current like situation of safety. And they say you have to close the door and then several other doors will open.
Mm-hmm.
But not until you close that door.
That's the thing.
So that's the moment in the dark where all the doors are closed.
Yeah.
You know, you have to risk that. Yeah. That's walking out on the plank. That's it.
I mean, the way I look at it is like, it's like anything in life. You start somewhere, you put energy into it, and you end somewhere else.
That's true.
And so...
That's so true.
Like, so you have, it's about choosing what you want to put energy into.
That's in your show, actually.
Is it?
It is. I'll explain later, but... in your show.
You can explain that. Thank you very, very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Especially for going way over time.
And I do think Tamara did explain it to Jono later, that it was in his show.
It's always great when you have those artistic moments where someone's like, oh yes, and you brought me this insight, and you're like, you're welcome.
Okay. Mm-hmm. At which point we're up to, actually top of the hour, exactly according to this clock, 3 o'clock on the nose. You're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM. That has been, or we have been, Finn and Zeke doing Movement Museum, talking about dance in Montreal on your radio, on your computer.
Mm-hmm.
Positive Vibes is coming up next and really, really soon. Thank you very much for listening, and I hope you all have a wonderful weekend. Thank you very much, Finn.
Yeah, well, thank you, Zeke.